Morning. Another beautiful day, right? So I'm going to tell you a story today, and it's one I've probably talked about from time to time over the years because it is the story I think of every time I read Mark's gospel or the equivalents in Matthew and Luke. And it's something I'm still obviously working through and need to go back to and return to from time to time. I grew up in a sailing family. My mother's father, we called him Grandpa Penny, grew up in Mystic, Connecticut, and he used to joke that he was born on a sailboat. He came from a long line of seamen. I think they were whalers for decades back. So it was a big part of his identity. And he, of course, taught my mother and her sisters how to sail as they were growing up. And when my mother and father started to date, she taught him how to sail. And when they married, they bought a sailboat. And when we were little, we would go out on the sailboat, sometimes into a lake. Sometimes we would go in a safe harbor on the San Francisco Bay. San Francisco Bay is pretty rough, so we stayed in safe waters. When I was about five, six, my parents decided to divorce. And for the next couple of years, my family went through a very difficult, contentious divorce. And during that time, my parents sold the sailboat. My dad carried a lot of anger and hurt with him about the divorce, but he was a very practical man and knew he needed to get on with his life, and so he remarried relatively quickly. My stepmother, Anne, was a very quiet, kind person, but we had a hard time bonding and becoming a family, a different kind of family with her. And my dad decided that an adventure together would help us to bond. And so one day, when I was about 11 or 12, my dad rented a sailboat and took my stepmother, my two sisters, and me out on the sailboat. We didn't stay in safe harbors. His plan was to have an adventure, so we had an adventure. We decided we were going to sail across the bay and stop somewhere for lunch. I don't really remember where. I've racked my brain. I've asked my sisters. I don't know where we went. San Francisco Bay is surprisingly rough. It is not what you think. You think a bay seems kind of safe. It's not. It's quite rough waters. But it was a beautiful day, and the waters were relatively calm, and we made it across the bay without much trouble. We'd gotten off to a late start. My father was an incredibly punctual person, so this probably was the beginning of some irritation for him. I joked earlier, he's like Jimmy, who says, early is on time is late. That was my father. But he was corralling three little girls. And so we got off to a late start. And I think it took us longer to get across the bay than he had anticipated. So it was getting fairly late in the afternoon. But we made it across safe and sound, and we pulled into the harbor, and we went into this little restaurant, and we ordered our lunch. I think we had to wait a while. It just kept being time building up, right? We had to wait for a while, and I could feel my father getting tense and impatient. He was not a patient man. And so as soon as we started eating, he's like, okay, come on, let's go. We got to get going, right? And so this anxiety was building. And he rushed us through our meal and back onto the boat. Once we were on the boat, he still seemed anxious. I didn't know what was going on. I don't even recall what I was doing, but I'll admit I was probably being pretty bratty because I was 11 years old. And my father snapped at me. And even though he was an impatient man, he was not one to snap. And so it really hurt my feelings. And I went and I took some towels that were on the boat, and I went up to the bow of the boat, and I made a little nest for myself under the bow. And I crawled in there. And I remember at first being angry, sort of stewing a little bit. And then I became sad, and I started to cry. And then for some reason, I started to sing to myself. And eventually, I fell asleep. I woke up to the boat pitching and heaving violently. You can see why I'm continually reminded of this story from the Mark passage, right? And I peeked out from the bow, and I could see these waves crashing against the side of the boat, right? And the sky was dark. It wasn't raining yet, but you could see that the rain was coming. So I made my way, so I remember sort of crawling along, holding on to things, making my way back to the stern of the boat where the family was. And my sister, Melissa, the middle sister, was sitting there wrapped in a blanket, and I kind of curled up next to her, and we got under this blanket together and just stared wide-eyed as my father was barking orders at my oldest sister and my stepmother, right? This wasn't a big boat. This was a boat that was big enough to hold the five of us, but not so big that my father couldn't handle it with a 14-year-old, somewhat novice sailor and a grown woman who'd never been on a boat before, right? So the boat is pitching. We're sitting there. It was scary. It was truly scary. But I have no memory of feeling like my life was in danger. I had so much faith in my dad. I knew that he would never let anything happen to me. And so I felt surprisingly safe. Jesus and his disciples were out on the water in a boat. Jesus, it had been a long number of days. Jesus had been walking and preaching and teaching and all the things that Jesus does, and he was exhausted, and he laid down in the stern of the boat, and he fell asleep. Now, I'm not likening myself to Jesus, so don't get that impression, right? He was in the stern, after all. I was in the bow. A storm kicked up, and Jesus slept through it. His disciples wake him up, and they say to him, "Don't you care that we are perishing?" And Jesus simply says, not addressing the disciples, he says, "Be peace, be still." And the waves and the wind calm, dead calm. And Jesus then says to the disciples, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And then, after the danger of the storm has passed, then the disciples are filled with great awe, or in other translation, feared a great fear. Not during the storm, but after Jesus has stilled the winds and the waves. They fear a great fear. They feel awe. They're no longer in mortal danger. But that is when the fear sets in. Jesus stills the seas and the wind with his voice. And after they, the disciples, recognized the elements of nature, obeyed him. And it was a little scary for them. Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? A sense of reverential awe and great terror, perhaps, at least some solid fear. Then the fear comes out not when they're shaking them awake. That sounds a little bit more like anger to me. The fear comes out after they see this miracle that he performs. The disciples had been with Jesus long enough at this point that they had seen a lot of remarkable stuff, right? Healings, casting out of demons. They understand that he possesses extraordinary gifts, that he's no ordinary man. But something about this felt different. This man could actually control the elements. And they were afraid. This experience crystallizes something for them, tips them off that Jesus is not just a skilled leader or a charismatic preacher, but no less than God, God's self. They were in the presence of the divine, and they knew instinctively that their lives would be forever changed by knowing him. And that terrified them. There's a book called Peace Like a River by an author, Leif Anger. And the narrator of the book is a man named Reuben, and he's talking about miracles. And he quotes his sister and says, "People fear miracles. because they fear being changed. People fear miracles because they fear being changed. In this story, the disciples witness a miracle, and they know somehow in this terrifying flash of insight that this miracle will change them forever. I asked my father several years ago if he remembered that day out on the bay. I didn't know if he would. I don't know if it had the same impact on him that it had on me. But his response was very quick and passionate. Are you kidding me? It's the single most frightening day of my life. This is a man who served as an officer in the Korean War. This was the single most frightening day of his life. He went on to say that he had grossly underestimated the risk. He saw the storm coming. That's why he was anxious. He saw the storm coming. He should have just kept us in the little town, little port where we had stopped, found a little hotel, camped out for the night, anything. But he was in such a rush to get us home that he made a really poor decision. And he was certain that we would perish that day. He was certain that he had signed our death warrant, that he'd put our lives at risk. And then he said that the first thing he thought of was my mother. This woman who, from his perspective, had broken his heart and torn his life into shreds. But that's what he thought of first. And what he thought about with my mother was her sitting at home, waiting for us to return, and waiting and waiting, getting more and more frantic. And he said under his breath, "Forgive me, Beth." Then he said he did something that he had never done before. And I would venture to say, never did again. My father was an avowed atheist. He prayed. My father, in this moment of terror, prayed and said the words, he said over and over and over and over again, "Please, God, keep my children safe." Obviously, we made it. I'm here, right? Everyone made it home back safe and sound. Somehow or another, we made it across the bay, back to the harbor where we'd started. It had begun to rain in earnest, and it was getting pretty dark by the time we docked the boat, but we made it. I remember distinctly pulling into the dock, tying up the boat. We all sort of grabbed our things and got off the boat and walked to the car, got into the car, drove home, and no one said a word. Complete silence. Now, was it a miracle that we made it to the dock, or simply good luck? I don't imagine that my father saw God's hand at play in that moment. I'd like to say that he had a religious awakening and everything changed for him in that moment, but it didn't. At his death at 92, he was still an avowed atheist. But that doesn't surprise me, really. A person of faith might have seen God's hand at work in that moment, but it's easy to explain away miracles, to explain away the divine in our lives. Maybe it was a coincidence that the wind and the sea stopped the minute that Jesus told it to be still. We can choose to ignore the miracle. We can choose to recognize it for what it is, but if we can ignore it, but here's the trick. Even if we ignore the miracle, we can still be changed by it. Back to the book, when Reuben says people fear miracles because they fear being changed, he then goes on to say, though ignoring them will change you also. My question to you, to all of you, is what miracles, where is the divine entering into your life? And how are those miracles in the presence of God, how are those encounters with the divine working to transform your hearts? Whether you are acknowledging them or not, how are you being changed? And what can you do to move past the fear of that change to embrace the transformation? Where is God calling us individually and together as a community to new and different places, new imagination? And what does it mean as a people of faith in our particular community, in our circumstances? How is God's presence in our lives calling us to transform our relationships, our work, our very beings? As an individual, as a community of faith, how do we open our hearts to the miracles, to the divine around us, to allow our hearts to be opened and transformed in unexpected ways? My father also told me that something began to change in him that day. There began to be an opening and a softening. He began the process of forgiveness. It took a long time. It was probably 20 years before my mother and father could be in a room together. But he credits that day as the beginning of that forgiveness. I don't know. I think part of it was that he was able to see her as human and fallible, capable of making big mistakes because he had made some big mistakes himself. And so he started to humanize her. I think that he also realized that the two of them had created something in the three of us, something more powerful and more important than any of the wounds that they had inflicted upon one another. But it was the beginning. And the real miracle that day wasn't that we made it back to the dock. The real miracle that day was the opening of his heart, the beginning that softening. Just like the real miracle for the disciples wasn't the stopping of the storm, but it was the recognition of the divine amongst them, God in their presence. My father passed away in July of 2022. He'd always told us that he wanted his ashes scattered in the San Francisco Bay. So in September of that year, my sisters and our families, my cousin Gary, who my father had raised, and his wife and his new baby, chartered a boat, not a sailboat, a big boat with a big engine, right? Solid. We met in Sausalito, and we played a few rounds of bocce ball. My father had been on a team that had been the reigning senior bocce ball players of Sausalito for years. So we played a little bocce ball. We were all terrible. We didn't get that gene from him. And then we loaded onto the boat and made our way out to the Golden Gate Bridge. It was a beautiful day, sunny, light breeze. Even as we got through the bridge, it still got a little rough, even in this big, huge boat, because it always is. The captain pulled into a cove, and it was very calm. And he stopped the boat. My sisters and I went to the edge, and we scattered the ashes over the edge of the boat. And they hit the water and sort of floated along the top of the water, and the sun came down, and everything sparkled. And it was beautiful. It was spectacular. And it was the perfect tribute to my father. Amen.